seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Anne-Marie O'Dwyer, chatting all things the psychiatry of cancer.
I want to say that it's very common to be very distressed, to have a very prominent psychological response to cancer, that they are not alone, that lots of other people feel in that way, and that it's important for them to have information. Information is power, but it has to be the right information.
As ever, we're available on all podcast platforms.
I'll tell you what, O'Driscoll, Corgan, extra man, it's Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is coming back inside! Leinster have another! Darcy, O'Driscoll.
Well, apology, left-wing fans, for coming to you 24 hours later than usual, but we decided to delay it to discuss today's Ireland squad announcement, Andy Farrell naming a 37-man panel for the upcoming Six Nations. Some big names who've missed out, albeit James Lowe has suffered an injury, so he won't be able to back up his impressive November. Kieran Frawley, Harry Byrne, Stuart McCluskey, Simon Zeebo, Ulton Delan, other guys who won't be featuring this spring in the Six Nations, but some exciting names who have made the cut, and we'll discuss that a little later with Keane Tracy, regular on the show. But first, Luke Fitzgerald's here with me. Luke, how are you? Always an exciting day when the Six Nations squad is announced.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, look, I think, sports taken a bit of a hammering during COVID, hasn't it? The excitement levels just probably haven't been as high, but I think I was buzzing for this one because I think hopefully the restrictions might be eased in most of the countries at that stage. Looks like we're probably hopefully past the worst of this.
I'm hoping they are, because I booked a trip to Paris. So like if the crowds restrictions aren't eased, I'll be out a lot of money. So I'm hoping
hopefully they are. I think it sounds like they might be from the soundings from just around Europe anyway. So hopefully that's the case. And off the back of that, I'm thinking hopefully we have full houses across the Six Nations, which I still think is the premier competition in rugby bar the World Cup. So really excited. Thought lots of interesting selections. A few of those ones that you named, probably not that surprising that they've been left out. The Ulton Delan one, look, he probably doesn't start. He hasn't started really anyway whenever he's been selected. So maybe it was easier to leave him out, given that he's going to be moving away next year. Still annoys him that there's probably one rule for maybe the likes of Johnny Sexton and a different one for maybe a Zeebo and obviously Delan in this case, where they're moving abroad, they just don't get selected. But look, that's probably virtue of Sexton's important to the team and the position he's playing. So Cartian's nice to see. We'll discuss that a bit, I'm sure. Surprised Carberry's in, to be honest. I like the look of Crowley. I thought it might be a nice opportunity to get him in there. Look at a few other interesting ones. I'm sure we'll delve into a bit more. Probably better to do that when Keane's on. But yeah, to agree with you, very exciting. The other, obviously, Six Nations squads were named yesterday mostly. So England squad is a bit of an interesting one. We're probably not going to get to discuss them until next week, or probably after next week at this stage, maybe the second half of next week's show.
A classic Eddie Jones selection, like George Ford having the year of his life, the team at the top of the table, and he picks the out half for Bath, who are having the worst season that they've ever had.
Look, whatever it is about Ford, he seems to have rubbed him up the wrong way. He's been on fire. Maybe it's an age thing, and he says, you know what, I kind of know.
He's only 28.
No, but he's obviously going to pick. Oh, sorry, I didn't know that, actually. I thought he was a bit older. Jeez, he's been around for ages.
Yeah. I know.
But sorry, Farrell is obviously going to be his guy, probably, I think. It looks to me like he's probably going for other guys who he thinks maybe. Well, sorry. Do I amend my original point now that you've given me the proper information about his age, probably should. But for whatever reason, he's in his bad books. I'm going to have to go with that excuse now. It's an odd enough one. But then again, you look at the likes of, you know, the Vunipolas, no sign. That's an interesting one, I think. I wonder, is that the end of them? Although he has been reasonably, you know, he's a pretty fickle guy in terms of the selections at times. So that's probably an interesting one too, Will. Probably gone with some of the form players, your Dom Brandts and guys like that. So that's an interesting team. We wait and see on that. I'm really, really excited to see that 23, actually. Really want to see who he picks because I think he's such an interesting selector, isn't he? French team looked strong. I think they're probably, are they the favourites for the competition? I think they probably are, given their performances in November. And they look like they've got a reasonable amount of continuity in that selection. You know, the way the French selections can be a bit mad. So, yeah, exciting couple of days, Will. And really looking forward now to this weekend's Heineken Cup games. And then we're straight into Six Nations, which is a real, you know, I'm really looking forward to that now. You know, we'll kick into gear for that. And hopefully COVID doesn't have too much of an impact.
Yeah, well, we're delighted to welcome Keane Tracy back to the show for the first time in 2022. Keane, how are things?
Hey, lads. It feels probably, we're too far gone to say Happy New Year, but will I say it anyway? Yeah, Happy New Year.
Yeah, go for it. Not happy, many happy returns. Good to have you back on the show. As always, a lot to talk about. Plenty of Champions Cup action between last weekend and this weekend to sink our teeth into over the next little while. But first, Ireland squad was named today, Keane. The players who were out from November, James Lowe, who suffered an injury, as well as Kieran Frawley, Harry Byrne, McCluskey, Simon Zebo and Ulton Delan. And then the players who were in, Jack Carty, Mac Hansen, Michael Lowry, Kieran Treadwell and Keane Prendergast have counted in as a development player. What did you make of the squad? Anything standing out for you?
Yeah, like I suppose my idea around every time an Ireland squad is named, it's to focus on the players who are there rather than the ones who are not, because it's so easy to get outraged by who isn't there. But I think it's a good squad. I don't think there was ever going to be too many shocks or surprises when you consider how many players Andy Farrell has brought in since he's taken charge, and obviously how well Ireland did last year. So I think it was along expected lines. It's obviously tough enough on James Lowe. From what I hear, we're recording the pod on Wednesday, he picked up an injury in training with Leinster on Tuesday, which rules him out. So that's a tough blow for him. Obviously, Mac Hansen benefits from that. He has obviously been out injured himself as well, so he's got a bit of ground to make up. I think his defence needs a bit of work. That'll be one of the key things I think he'll be working on with Andy Farrell when he comes into the squad. I think Michael Lowry certainly deserves his place in the Ireland squad. You look at his performance last weekend and that wasn't a once off. He's been playing really, really consistently well for Ulster at fullback. So delighted to see him get a shot. I think the biggest surprise for me in terms of inclusions, I have to say, is Kieran Treadwell. Didn't see that coming. I think he's won three caps, all three of them on the summer tour in 2017. Has kind of been in a couple of squads since, but never really been close to featuring, really. A bit of surprise there. He's jumped ahead of a couple of guys like Ross Maloney, Finian Witcherly, even someone like Thomas Ahern, Jean Klein. So, fair play to him. But I think even when Ulster's locks are all fit, I'm not sure he's first choice. Like, he's been a bit inconsistent. So he's done well, I think, to make the squad. Obviously, Ulton Delan not being in there is, I think, purely down to the fact that he's heading to France, likely to La Rochelle next season. Some people might say that's harsh, but I think that was always going to be the case once he committed his future away from Ireland. That's just the way the IRFU's policy is. So a lot to be excited about as well. And you consider, you know, the players who are already there. I think overall, I think it's a really good squad.
Yeah, Luke, anything jumping out to you?
Not particularly. Like, I think Craig Casey might be a little bit lucky, although he's come into some form of late, but I don't think he's actually been playing very well. I like him a lot as a player, actually. But that one there, I think, look, Mac Hansen, he'd have to be working hard in his defence with Andy Farrell. I mean, he's been so exciting with ball in hand. But he gets in by virtue of an injury to James Lowe, who's done some great work on his defence. And I think he was a kind of integral part of the Irish effort in November. He really looks to have turned things around. Bundy Aki is a lucky boy. Very surprised that he hasn't got some kind of sanction for that behaviour. Delighted to see Lowry in there as well. You know, he's a small guy, but geez, he's very exciting with ball in hand. And it was nice to see him finish off a few lovely bits of play. And actually, sorry, there was more than just finishing off a bit of play. There were some lovely, lovely tries he scored, you know, last weekend. So that was really nice to see that, because Northampton's a tricky place to go away and win. And they're actually playing quite well in the Prem. So that was a big win for them. Other than that, no, like the forwards is kind of like Treadwell's the only one that probably sticks out. I think it looks like it'll, you know, there won't be much movement from the team that played in November, bar obviously Lowe being out. So, yeah, interesting to see now how they all come together. They need to do that pretty quickly. Lots of players will be, I think, pretty undercooked. I mean, you know, the squad is made up of a vast majority of, you know, kind of Leinster players. And, you know, I don't think Montpellier is any kind of way to for guys to prepare for a Six Nations. I think we can all probably agree on that. So that'll be the key test for them, is whether they can come together pretty quickly with, you know, very limited game time. Few experienced heads like Sexton and that, I think, will be, you know, that'll be fine for them. He's done that on a number of occasions. But some of the younger cohort, that might be a challenge. So wait and see how all that kind of pans out and who gets selected. But that seems to me to be the real key challenge for this squad, is how they cope with lots of people who are undercooked, in my opinion.
Yeah, we might follow some of the squad talking points into the Heineken Cup chat generally. And we might as well, Keane, start with Leinster, considering we haven't seen them play in so long. And albeit, as Luke mentioned there, the Montpellier game was the only real interest in it was to see if they could match a couple of old long-standing Champions Cup records, which I think they broke their own record for biggest win anyway. Like, nothing to take from it, really. Like, they scored 89 points, and I still thought they were a little bit sloppy. They were rusty, naturally. It had been a long time since they played. You know, what how do you assess that?
I mean, what can you say about it? The one thing I will say is I knew you'd be the man for the stats, Will, so I was following your Twitter as soon as I saw Leinster racking in the tries. I knew you'd have it to hand.
Well, it's funny because when I was thinking about it, I was like,
is it the highest winning margin, like, Will, or is it the highest score?
No, because they scored 92 points against Bordeaux in 2004, but they conceded 17.
Okay, all right, okay. Fair enough. You might want to clarify that.
I was having a flashback to my childhood, and I was like, I vaguely recall Leinster scoring 92 points, but then I was like, that couldn't have been right. And then I looked it up, and I was like, Jesus, David Hallwell scored 29 points in one game. But yeah, sorry, I digress.
Just to clarify there, I was very confused. I was thinking, geez, it's very unlike Will to get a stat wrong, but you were talking about winning margins. So
that's the biggest winning margin. The third greatest winning margin in the tournament history, I believe.
Yeah, look, it is. It's a tricky one though, Keane, is it? Like, I mean, I thought they looked really sloppy in the first half. There was lots of people kind of throwing, kind of similar to Munster a little bit, actually, like in really good positions, you know, whether it be in the 22 or from a break, and some real sloppy play. Now, it didn't really matter for Leinster, but it kind of nearly mattered for Munster. But sorry, to touch on Leinster, what did you think about that first half? Or probably the second half of the first half was excellent. But what did you think about the first half?
I think it was inevitable, really. Like, I mean, considering they hadn't played in so long and they probably got just dragged down to Montpellier's level a little bit. But look, they found their feet. I don't think it's a major concern. Really, guys were just obviously, you know, really eager to impress. I think, you know, it was interesting, like Leinster still spent the same amount of time in yesterday's review session going through it as they would have any other game. But I think one of the biggest interesting things that came out of it is a point that Felipe Contepomi was touching on yesterday, that the ball and play time was almost 40 minutes in the game. And Montpellier have been averaging just below half an hour, 30 minutes in the top 14. So as Contepomi said, they took them to the kill zone and they just absolutely destroyed them. I mean, the team that even finished was more like an Espoirs academy team, but that's not Leinster's problem. I think it's a terrible look for the competition. And, you know, it's Leo Cullen is obviously still really angry about the 28-0 win that they had to give Montpellier. And I've always kind of thought this in the back of my mind, that I think Leinster are a bit more pissed off because it's Montpellier of all teams, because they're a team who haven't really, you know, given their all to the Heineken Cup ever, really, you know. So I think that's what hurt them even more, because, you know, it was a club that don't take this competition seriously, and that has to sting. So it could come back to bite them further along in the tournament, depending on seedings and things like that. But look, Leinster are in good shape. the biggest concern coming out of it was obviously Tadhg Furlong's injury. And that's probably something worth mentioning in regard to the Six Nations squad too. Like, Andy Farrell has named Furlong in there, which is great. James Ryan, Jordan Larmour, obviously those three guys had their issues last week, but also Joey Carberry and Ian Henderson, who are obviously still currently injured too. So there's a few fitness, I guess, issues hanging over a few players in the Ireland squad, but the medics and Andy Farrell are obviously confident that they're going to recover in time.
I was going to say, as soon as I saw, like, you know, positive soundings about Furlong and Larmour, I just immediately thought they were going to be ruled out for 6 months, given the way the injury updates often go with these things, that they, you can get one real positive update. Oh, you know, they're on the mend. And then you don't, like, Will Connors twisted his knee in the Six Nations last year, and we were told it was a little bit of a knee knock. He didn't play for like 8 months. Like, that's the kind of injury updates you often get.
And I think especially, like, considering Furlong has had a calf injury last year as well, which obviously kept him out for a while. But look, he was out on the pitch after full time. You could see him walking around. And even when Contepomi was asked about him yesterday, like, the question was put to him that, oh, like, will he be fit for the Six Nations? And he kind of laughed and said, well, we haven't ruled him out of this weekend. Now, even if he doesn't play this weekend, I'd probably be surprised if he does. They don't really need to play him, especially because someone like Michael Alatoa, I thought, was brilliant when he came on for Furlong last week. Obviously, not up against much, but he looks like he's really finding his feet as well. So, yeah, look, Leinster could have, it'll obviously be tough for him Bath this weekend, but they could go there and put on another big score. I think the issue for Leinster is they're kind of, you know, they're going to breeze through the pool stages without having had a proper test. And I think the questions that we've spoken about so often on the podcast, we spoke about it in the preview at the start of the season, is have they learned their lessons from, like, the Saracens defeats and the La Rochelle defeat last season? I don't think they're going to be answered until we get to the business end of the season. And maybe that's the biggest concern for Leinster, that they're going to be undercooked by the time they do face a better, bigger, more physical team.
Yeah, and if Tadhg Furlong does face a spell on the sidelines, it would be interesting to see if they move Porter back to tight head, or if they keep a loose head and maybe start Finlay Beelum, or what they might do. But as you say,
Finlay
hopefully
Beelum's playing excellent rugby.
Mm, I agree, yeah. Excellent
rugby. And that's not just because of that terrible haircut that I think I'm spotting him. He looks like he's really playing, like, very, very good rugby at the moment. Actually, for quite a while, actually. Would you agree?
Totally agree. And I think, you know, it's Will talks about, you know, switching Porter back. I just really don't think they should do that. I think Finlay Beelum has benefited from Connacht haven't been switching him back and forth, because he has been doing that for a while. I mean, you think back to the Georgia game a couple of years ago, and they put him back onto the opposite side of the scrum, and it didn't go well for him at all. So I think he's really benefiting from having more time at tight end, and Connacht certainly are reaping the rewards of that too. I agree with you. I think he's been going really well.
And Luke, just in terms of Leinster generally, you know, some of the points Keane made there about maybe being a bit undercooked, and you said it yourself, like that performance at the weekend, or that whole spectacle against a very weakened Montpellier team and thrashing them so comprehensively. Is it just about kind of blowing off the cobwebs after being inactive for so long? You know, what's your kind of assessment of where Leinster are at now?
Yeah, like, it's, you know, it's a little, I'm just a little concerned. Like, there was people getting out of the way of the tackles for them, you know, in the Montpellier team. Like, those kind of games, there's just no real physicality in it. So I think it was really hard to get a good idea about who was actually really playing well. So, yeah, difficult. Like, look, some of the guys look pretty sharp. Like, I still think those two hookers are just class, aren't they? They're so exciting to watch. Really excited to see if Sheehan gets it. Like, I mean, Kelleher is brilliant, but, like, Sheehan looks, he's so good. He looks chunky as well. He looks like a big man. Reminds me very much of a Dane Coles in terms of the pace, but also how he looks, his body shape. So he's a very exciting talent there. And yeah, like, I mean, look, what stands out from it? I think you just wonder, like, there's a kind of a respect and for the ball particularly, actually, that's very important in international rugby, that you just won't get in a game like that. I thought Leinster were a little bit sloppy at times. We're looking for offloads. There wasn't much kind of fight from the Montpellier team in the tackle area, but also in the ruck. And you do want to have a certain level of sharpness in those physical encounters, particularly at the start of the Six Nations, when the game is a little bit tighter. So it would be a little bit of a concern for me, probably why I mentioned it at the start. You know, and I'd say as well, I'd be interested to see this kind of situation at 10 that's unfolding. We probably should have mentioned it. Like, Jack Hardy back in the squad is, is probably a good thing to see. I'm never really convinced about him at this level, but he's been brilliant for Connacht and I think definitely deserves it. But Carberry back in straight away. I mean, I'm not sure I get that. I don't know if I get that one. And I thought I really liked the look of Crowley, and I thought there's probably a nice opportunity for him to get in there, because Carty's definitely going to be playing second fiddle at this point, I think. Particularly if you have your two tens not having played rugby in a couple of months, like Carty's definitely got to be on the bench, I think, for you, because you're going to have someone who's kind of match hardened. I was just wondering, would Crowley have got to go in that Six Nations squad? I really like looking at him. I like Healy too, but that's an area probably of concern when maybe I think of Leinster and Sexton not getting much game time, or having no game time, and Carberry as well. Probably two of the standouts, Will, in terms of when I think of Ireland, because the bigger picture for me at the moment is Ireland, you know?
Yeah, well, Keen, speaking of Carty and Connacht, obviously that game was the game of the weekend, 28-10 up after, I think, 58, 60 minutes. I briefly switched over to Racing Ospreys, and when I turned back over, the game had taken a decidedly different turn. You know, what's your view on what went wrong for Connacht? We'll come on to Carty now in a minute, but just starting off on that, what was your view on how they let that slip?
Yeah, it was tough. Like, what was it, an 18-point lead, I mean, that they let slip. They probably just stopped playing and stopped, doing what they do well. I think it's the one, Connacht are not the full product yet, but the full article, but I think it's that top level of seeing out games at the top level of Europe against the best teams that is what they're kind of really, they need to add to their game. And, they went for both games they played, Leicester home and away, they went toe-to-toe to them, but ultimately came up short in both of them in very different circumstances. Obviously got torn apart in the scrum over in Welford Road. That was a bit of an issue last week as well. So, but there was circumstance in that. I think, Jack Ainger came on and also picked up a knock too. So I was on the Connacht press conference call today with Andy Friend, and he was kind of saying that there was a lot of soul searching. But look, I think they have to take a glass half full approach to it. They're going to Stade this weekend, and it's mad to think that they've never been in the knockout stages of the Heineken Cup. Now, I know it's obviously extended this year, so they have a better chance. And look, they are going to be barring a disaster that cast, topple Harlequins in London. They're going to be true come Sunday afternoon before they play. So I think they just have to turn the page. I think you're right. I think it says a lot that you asked both of us about the Ireland squad and neither of us mentioned Jack Carty. Because I think it was just so, it was a given, I think, that he had to get a call back in. I think, he hasn't played under Andy Farrell since he's taken over, hasn't played since the 2019 World Cup game. But I think him getting called into the squad last November as injury cover was really important. I think that kind of showed that he was on his way back in. He's taken the coach's advice on board. I think he's a more mature player. I think he's really benefited from taking on the captaincy from Connacht this season. You'd be very surprised if Joey Carberry will be fit enough to even be on the bench for a game like this, the opening Six Nations game. But I think just on Luke's point, I think you're starting to see now kind of Andy Farrell's squad and like building towards the World Cup and who he kind of wants to be there. I think Craig Casey is another one, Kieran Marmion is very unlucky not to be in the squad, but Andy Farrell clearly sees something in Craig Casey. I don't think he's been playing that badly. I just think he's probably hampered by the style of play that Munster are playing. He's been asked to do things that just don't play to his strengths. But I think Andy Farrell is maybe looking at the bigger picture here and what he can offer. So, I think we're starting to see the shape of the World Cup squad. I mean, all going well. Obviously, there's so many things that can happen by the time we get there. But the fact that Ireland and Andy Farrell have made no secret that that's what they're building towards, and they're not shying away from it, saying we'll take it one campaign at a time. I think we're starting to see kind of what the plan is going forward to France 2023.
Yeah, and Keane Prendergast, another Connacht player who's been rewarded with a place, albeit as a development player, so he won't feature, you'd presume. Look, for Connacht, it's funny. I feel like the way they lost that game with the big lead and the last second try, I feel like of all the provinces, they're the one province that seem to be like involved in those sorts of games like quite regularly, where they might be pipped at the post after looking like they put it away. Whereas the other provinces, when they lose, it might be slightly different fashion. Like, you know, Leinster have been maybe out muscled the last couple of years. Munster have maybe been a bit conservative in their big games and it's come back to bite them. Ulster sometimes just don't turn up. I feel like with Connacht, a lot of times they could have some great streaks in games and then at the last second things can just go against them sometimes.
Yeah, I think they're still a little bit loose. Like, I think if you think back on the game, I thought some of their one-on-one tackling was poor at key moments. That really let them down. Like, because I think I felt like they had kind of big defensive efforts for portions, but then another part, like, I think they've got a, like, I think back in the Leinster game in the RDS as well, like, they actually had some really good sets in defense, but then other parts, they just completely fell apart. And I kind of thought Leicester took advantage of that. I thought they're obviously Leicester's maul was very good as well. They looked under pressure there. You know, I feel like there's a lot there. I think it's a concentration thing with them sometimes. Particularly when I look at the personnel, like, it wasn't a complete mismatch for some of the missed tackles. It was oftentimes just poor technique. And I felt like a lack of concentration. So that's why I think they're kind of involved in those kind of games, Will, because I think the only thing that's very consistent about them actually is their attack. I think they're inconsistent in a lot of other areas. And I think if they can improve those things, I think they start winning more of those games. I also feel at times they can be a little bit loose with their discipline. In some respects, I think there's obviously, it was very obvious the way Bundy Aki approached the referee after the game. They do need to have a look at that. I think they can give up kind of easy penalties when they're under pressure as well, sometimes when they don't have to. But I think maybe the discipline is something that if they could get that right as well and just tighten up and keep the concentration longer in defense, I think they become a really difficult prospect, because I think from an attack perspective, they're right up there. Like, I think they can really play with the best of them. They've got some flair players, but all their pack as well. They've lots of good carriers. They're generally pretty, you know, stingy with the ball. They can hold on to it for long periods of time. So I think if they can get through, I don't think you'd like to face Connacht, because I think they can, you know, if they get their tails up, they're very difficult to stop and attack.
I think one of the points about it is, just to touch on what Luke's saying there, I think it's a lot of it is mental as well. It's just kind of having that experience of having been in those big games to be able to see them out. I think you can see it. There's a cohort of players like, you know, Niall Murray, and you mentioned Cian Prendergast too. To be fair, he's probably unlucky he's not in the full squad the way he's been playing. He looks like an outstanding prospect. So those guys don't have any fear, but maybe for the older guys, who, you know, are they burdened by the fact that, you know, Connacht have never been in the knockout stages of a Heineken Cup. So maybe that plays into their minds as well. And I think there's so much at stake for them this weekend. Like I said, you know, they should get through by, you know, beating Stade. But I think that could have a huge knock-on effect. I think it gets a monkey off their back as well, that, you know, because the club themselves have been putting pressure on them as well. Like, even in the build-up to the game, I noticed kind of on their social media that they were, you know, hyping up that, you know, how it was going to be a historic occasion and that. So I think getting that monkey off their back could be massive in the long run for them too.
Yeah, and I've been crunching possible permutations for knockout ties, and Connacht, there's a good chance they could be playing maybe an Irish team in the last 16, depending on if they win in Stade or if they get a losing bonus point, and if Leinster or Ulster look like they're going to finish up towards the top of the opposite pool. So you could have an all-Irish affair in the last 16 as well. But Luke, you mentioned the Bundy Aki thing there. I was very surprised that he wasn't cited, you know,
very astonished poor. Really. Like, it's funny, I was talking to Tommy Bowe on Monday morning about this, and, you know, I think we both feel that, you know, for quite a while, rugby's been slipping a little bit in this area. Like, lots of talk to the referee, lots of back chat. You know, probably just too much interaction from people outside of the captain with the referee. I think this is kind of a particularly bad one. So I was amazed that he wasn't cited. Like, to talk to the referee like that when you're not the captain is, well, I think it's unacceptable.
Well, even if you were the captain, to be honest, even if you were the captain, I don't think it would have been much better.
No, sorry. But, like, even, yeah. Look, sometimes those conversations can be a bit more robust, and that's probably acceptable once the referee's engaging. But I don't know. I just felt like it was, that's a slipping standard in the game for quite a while. And I think that was an opportunity to say, particularly to all the young kids out there, that doesn't happen in rugby. You get cited for that. That's, you know, that it's kind of a fairly egregious crime in the game. It's almost as bad as, in terms of a ban or whatever, I kind of feel like it's one of those ones, almost like a high tackle type ban or a dirty play type ban. So, look, I was amazed that they didn't take action. I think he's a lucky boy to be in the squad. And look, it's great for Ireland because he's such a good player. But I think it was a bad missed opportunity by the authorities.
It's worth mentioning now that he did get an official warning today from the siding.
What's an official warning? She just got three of them. Is it three of them before he actually goes in front of the siding?
I don't know. Look, he came out. He apologized. It was the heat of the moment. He put his hands up.
That's the slipping standards, man. That's like what it's like. That's when you talk to soccer fans and they're like, oh, you know, that's the passion within the game. And then you have 10 minutes waiting around while 22 guys are surrounding the referee. Like, that's the slipping standards we're talking about. Like, I actually feel quite passionate about this one. I think it's a really bad mistake. You can't talk to the referee like that. You can't do. We can't let that slip into the game, no matter how high the tensions get. It was something that was always great about rugby. And I just think it's bad that they're letting that slip. Yeah, sorry, no, Keane. I obviously feel strongly about it.
No, absolutely. And I'm not condoning it for a second. I'm just making the point that he did get a warning today and that he did put his hands up straight away afterwards. Look, he did a moment, but I'm not condoning it either. I think he made a mistake. He knew he made a mistake, but I think, you know, we move on.
But tweeting and saying you made a mistake, you know what, like, you know, why should that mean you shouldn't get a ban? You know what I mean? Like, as in, players do that all the time. Like, if you say you made a mistake with a high tackle, that doesn't mean you shouldn't get a ban for it. Like, I would agree with Luke that I was very surprised given the way he spoke to him. And I suppose it shouldn't really make a difference, but that he was so wrong as well. Like, as in, he was completely wrong. You know, obviously, that shouldn't matter. If you're talking to the ref inappropriately, you're inappropriate. But it's just that he got the whole thing completely arseways as well, which, in fairness, you couldn't really tell if you were sitting the ground. But obviously,
but it's why you shouldn't even be talking to the referee anyway. Like, it's anyway, I thought it was, I actually annoyed me. When I saw that today, I was like, they're gonna wimp out of that one with the narrative around the apology was just, anyway, look, it is what it is. And from an Irish perspective, I'm delighted, but I think from a rugby perspective, it's a bad miss.
Well, he's available to play against Stade Français this weekend as well, as Keane mentioned, a big chance for them to get a big scalp in France. Moving on to Ulster, Keane, a team who were very impressive in Northampton at the weekend, you know, backing up their other European victories so far. Obviously, they're coming off that disappointing game against Munster, so there was question marks about how they would go over in Northampton. But, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the back line was really humming. Like, Robert Balakoon had a great game. You know, with James Lowe being ruled out, a spot in the wing opens up. But I know he usually plays in the right wing, but maybe with some rejigging, he might feature. Michael Lowry, another person who played really well. James Hume going well again. You know, were you impressed with them?
Yeah, really impressed. I think the average age of their backline was just under 23. Super impressed. I think Balakoon, I would start Balakoon, I think, against Wales. He has it all, really. You look at the athletic profile of him, frame, he's a really good defender, like top end speed, superb footwork. I think it's kind of time to start now putting him into the starting team. I think he's fully justified. I've seen a lot of chat around, probably particularly, maybe it was on BT when I was watching it the other day, that Ulster are dark horses for the Heineken Cup. I'm not all in at all on this Ulster hype. And like I said, I think it's only coming from certain quarters, but maybe people aren't watching Ulster regularly enough. But, you know, they beat Northampton. To be fair, I did say before they played Northampton at home that Northampton would put up a good show. Or maybe that was for the Racing game, actually. But Northampton are no great shakes themselves either. I think Ulster played really well, and I'm not taking anything away from them. But I would sort of temper the expectations and hype around them. I still think they have problems in their front five. Probably goes back to why I was surprised that Treadwell got into the Ireland squad. I think once they come up against one of the bigger powerhouses later in the tournament, I think they'll run into trouble.
The only thing just to come in on their dark horse potential, and I agree them winning it is a very long shot, but the position they're in now with three wins from three and potentially going for four from four at home to Claremont, is they have the inside track potentially for those home games and the knockouts, and they're very difficult. At the European record, Ravenhill is as good as any home record in Europe. They've lost very few games there over the last five seasons or so, you know, they could actually, you know, I'd fancy them against most teams in Ravenhill. I actually would.
Yeah, no, and again, I'm trying not to take anything away from them. I'm so impressed with their backline, and considering that Stuart McCloskey, who's such a key cog in their wheel, like, is missing as well. And like, I don't even think we've seen the best of Dwayne Vermeulen yet. I think he's been like solid, but I don't think I think there's plenty more to come from him, but I would still have reservations about Billy Burns at 10. I know he played quite well last week, but I just don't think you're going to win a Champions Cup with Billy Burns at out half. And I know that sounds very harsh, but that's just how I feel. I think someone like Nathan Doak has slotted in really well instead of John Cooney, big boost to Phil, but yeah, like I think fair play to them, it was a cracking result, and I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Claremont at home this weekend as well. But once they run into a bigger team in Europe, I think they're going to be in trouble.
One thing, Luke, to get your opinion on, you know, Billy Burns is someone we've talked about a lot in the show, and you know, people may be thinking he has certain limitations. Michael Lowry is a guy who's playing very well recently, and he was on record very recently saying that he wants to play out half. He sees himself as an out half primarily. You know, what do you think about that? Is that something you think could be a big benefit if he moved in there, played very well, potentially giving them another option?
You just need time in there, though. Like, I just really feel, I kind of felt that way about Joey Carberry moving in. Now, he's probably, you know, not a great example because obviously he's, you know, had so many injury problems, but I felt like he just didn't get enough time in Leinster to really warrant a move down to, you know, such a huge club in Munster. There was a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And Larry, you need to play there. Like Billy Burns, for whatever reason, Dan McFarland just likes him. I would feel the same. You know how I feel about Billy Burns. I just don't think he's up to it. At this level, I think he's good in patches. I think he's got a nice little tidy kicking game, you know, crossfield kicks and that, decent passing game. But I just don't feel like he has. I don't feel like he's got an X factor, and I don't feel like he's even good enough to be, you know, kind of solid at all the things you need to be solid at. Plus, he's not even a place kicker, so I don't get the Billy Burns thing, if I'm being honest. And that's a really brutal assessment of someone who's a pro rugby player. I feel awful saying that. I genuinely do. But I just don't, it just doesn't do it for me as a player. I just don't rate him that highly. Larry, if he wants to do that, you've got to play in there. You've got to get the minutes. You've got to feel the heat of a good defense coming at you relentlessly for 80 minutes. And he's not going to be doing that. It's just a completely different position that you're playing at full back. Now, from his perspective, it might be good because I think Will Addison, you know, probably comes in with the rise of Hume in the center along with McCluskey. When Addison comes back, I think he goes to fullback. And I think, you know, where does Larry fit in then? He might be playing, if he continues to play the way he's playing, they might find somewhere else for Addison. But I don't think that'll be the case. And I think Stockdale comes back. Balakoon looks like the long-term option on the wing. McElroy I like too. So I think those slots are taken. So where does he go? I think probably the weakest part of the Ulster backline is 10. For whatever reason, I don't know what Ian Madigan has done, but he doesn't seem to be being considered. I know he's had some injury trouble at the start of the season, but that 10 slot seems to be up for grabs. If I was Larry long-term, I'd be thinking that might be my best option. So maybe that's why he's saying that. Maybe he's had a look at that and at the situation there and thought that might be my best option to solidify a place. But for whatever reason, they just keep picking Billy Burns. And I think it'll be to their detriment when it comes to the key stages of any kind of competition. God, I feel off. I genuinely didn't like saying that about him. I feel like I really decimated him, but I just don't. I think it's a mistake Ulster picking or continuing to pick him.
It's not going to change either because they just recently gave Billy Burns a new contract. So look, it is the way it is. I think Will is spot on to mention the fact that Lowry's been on record as saying it. He played there in school, and I think he possibly won an Ulster Cup, Schools Cup as well. And Luke, you touched on a good point there that the issue for Ulster is that they have never had I don't think they've ever had their first choice backline fit, primarily because Will Addison has been out so much. Stockdale has been out. So I think if you had everyone fit, I think it would be very, very interesting. But I think Luke is spot on to say that, you know, if Addison was fit in the morning and they put him into fullback, you can't just drop Michael Lowry into out half and say, OK, you steer us there against Toulouse or whatever in a Champions Cup quarterfinal. It just doesn't really work like that. So I think if he is going to be an option there, I think you've got to start blooding him in there. And I think it'd be worth a look. I know he's quite small and that could be an issue on the defensive line, but if you've got someone like Stuart McCloskey outside of you, no better man to have, you know, there to provide a bit of protection. So it's a good option to have. And like, I'm a bit surprised that maybe they haven't looked at it more, but then again, when you see how well he's playing from fullback and the threat he gives you from the backfield, maybe it's no surprise that they're happy to keep him there as well.
But Burns is obviously a kind of guy of good character. There's no doubt about that. Like, he's very well liked, clearly. I could see him being kind of not a coach's pet per se, but you know what I mean? Like, I could see him being a guy that you're like, oh, do you know what? We like having him around the setup. He could be a great trainer, could be a good talker, could be a good personality to have around the team. Like, I think he has captained them on a few occasions. So, you know, he's a guy maybe who's kind of maybe a very smart rugby player or something like that. And that's why he continues to get selected there. The coach might like that, might like him being his general on the pitch because maybe they vibe off the pitch better than, say, others there. But yeah, it's an interesting conundrum for Larry going forward, particularly given how well he's playing. Because I think I've come to really like Addison as a player. I really think he looks like a really good rugby player the more I watch of him. Obviously, he's been injured a lot. But I was forming the view that he was a very good player before he's gone through this bad injury run, you know. So I think he might get ahead of Larry if he comes back. So interesting times for him.
Yeah, Keane, just to wrap up on Ulster, the news that Jacob Stockdale is out for the season now, obviously a big blow to him and to Ulster. Like, it leaves him in a obviously a bad place, but also, you know, he's kind of a bit in limbo because he played the first game of the season, and again with these injury updates, we were told he had an ankle knock, and then he just never came back. You know, did he disappear off the face of the earth? And then finally this year, it's revealed this week that he won't be playing again for the rest of the season. A lot of players have come and passed him by while he's been out injured. Like, it'll be a tough fight for him now, you know, he'll be back one season before that World Cup. It'll be a tough fight for him now.
Yeah, I suppose, injury updates are harder and harder to come by these days, but the Ulster injury updates are just, they're crazy. Like, they just say nothing in them. It was actually Stockdale who put it up on social media himself earlier this week. Now, to be fair, Ulster then said the following day that he had surgery, but I don't know if they would have said that unless he hadn't put it up on his Instagram account. So that's where you're at. Like, I mean, you're actually looking at players' Instagram accounts to see, like, if there are any kind of updates here. It's absolutely mad. But that's the world we live in. That's just a journalist gripe. But yeah, like, it is. I mean, geez, you think back, like, 2018 seems like a long time ago now, doesn't it? When, like, everything he touched turned to gold. But, like, he's still young enough. Like, we're not talking about a guy who's, like, in his late 20s, you know, hitting into his 30s. He's still got time in his hands. I wouldn't be writing him off at all. I think McElroy has done really well, like Luke said, since he's come in. Really good footwork. And Dan McFarland had said he'd been chatting to Andy Farrell about him too. So obviously he's in the Ireland, you know, wider selection too. So I think Stockdale just needs to probably take time now to get this ankle injury right. It's obviously been at him for a while, and just come back fresh for next season and hopefully get a run. And if he does, I think there's plenty of time for him to get into a World Cup squad or whatever it is, and to even be potentially starting on the team. Obviously, he's got a few issues to sort out in his game, but we saw the improvements that James Lowe has made defensively. There's no reason why someone like Stockdale can't do the same.
Yeah, a big couple of months ahead to get fit for the start of next season. To finish up on Munster now, Keane, their win over Cast. You were over there. The big trip to France. I think your first road trip possibly since before COVID, was it?
First road trip since the Ireland-England game in the 2020 Six Nations. Well, you could have sent me to Timbuktu and I would have been absolutely delighted to have been on a plane and going to watch a rugby match abroad again. Yeah, not the most glamorous spot in the world, Cast. You've probably been there, Luke, have you? Yeah, not the most glamorous spot, but like I said, I would have happily went anywhere at all and been delighted to be covering rugby abroad.
What did you make of the performance, the win? Obviously, they got the job done at the very end, but given the cast had made so many changes, it was a pretty, you know, disappointing performance considering the chances they had, you know, the 5 meter line and sort of squandered the missed opportunities in 22. What was your assessment?
Yeah, I think when you're there, like, same as any game, you lads know, like, when you're at a game, you probably have a different perception of it than when you're watching it on TV. Like, Cass is such an old school rugby club. Like, it was, like, really cool to be there, actually. You go into the press box and they're kind of giving you wine and beer and you're like, oh, no, I'm okay. But they're absolutely insistent on that you have a glass of wine. And then just before kickoff, a cheese board comes around with, like, the type of cheeses. I don't know what kind of cheese you eat in your house, but I certainly hadn't seen the type of cheese that were on this board. So it was just the most French cultured thing ever. And then when you thought you'd seen it all, then the club president comes into the press box and goes around and gives everyone a fist bump before the match. Like, it was just... Yeah, it was just very different to how we do things here. But I was certainly all on board for what they were laying on for the journalists. But yeah, like, so The pitch, first of all, the pitch was awful. Even before kickoff, it was absolutely awful. By the time the second half started, the temperatures had dropped to -3, which obviously you're not going to see on TV. So the conditions were very tricky. It wasn't a full capacity because of the French have restrictions as well, but like it was still pretty hostile there. But Munster made such hard work of it. I think it was different to previous games when we've been very critical of them for their attack, and I'm not going to praise their attack, like in a sense, but I think there was intent there. You could see that they were trying things. It was actually just execution of what they were trying to do, I think, really let them down. They had a good few loose offloads, a couple of poor decision making, but they did try things, and I think that was encouraging. You're starting from a low base when that's, you know, when you're taking positives from that. But look, same old Munster. I think I could have written that match report on the flight over because it was just a classic kind of Munster, you know, get out of jail in France, last gasp try. I think you've got to give them credit for digging it out. I think, what was it, 72 minutes on the clock when Peter O'Mahony pointed to the corner instead of going for the posts. I was sitting there going, surely they're going to take the points and then get back up to Fitch. I couldn't believe they went for the corner. And that was even before that Cass stole the line out. So they showed good character to get back up the pitch and win it through the Gavin Coombs try. I think Jack Crowley, I was really impressed with him, actually. And you probably wouldn't have seen it on TV, but Cass were giving him plenty off the ball. And he was more than happy to give it back. He's got a little bit, he's got something about him, got a bit of a swagger that I really like. He kicked really well. Like I said, not the easiest conditions to be kicking in. The crowd were baying for blood every time that he was lining up a kick. Tadhg Byrne, I thought, was outstanding. And so was Peter O'Mahony, by the way. I think you really see the value of a guy like Peter O'Mahony in a game like that. He was superb in opposition line out, superb mall defence. But yeah, that Munster wouldn't be anywhere unless Tadhg Byrne won that turnover penalty in near the end. What was it, 75 minutes on the clock? And I think his performances have been so good that I think even if James Ryan and Ian Henderson are both fit for the Wales game, I think Tadhg Byrne has to start, really, personally, for me anyway.
Yeah, as you say, that last gasp turnover really decided the game in many ways. Luke, you know, what did you take of it? You know, it was interesting to see Stephen Larkham's press conference today, and he kind of was having a back and forth with one of the journalists who was asking about whether Munster are lacking a bit of variety, and he kind of put the journalist on the spot and was like, well, what exactly are you talking about and stuff like that. So he obviously was bristling a little bit at the criticism of their attack or questions like that. But, you know, overall, what did you make of that game?
Yeah, I thought they were a little bit, like, I actually thought there was lots of good stuff in there. I thought they were bad in Cast's 22. I thought they made a lot of handling errors. They tried, like, silly offloads, different things like that, where I felt like if they hung on to a few more of them and kind of held on to the ball a bit more, I thought they might have got more dividends and they might have actually been able to build some kind of score and capitalize on pressure at different times. I think when they decide to play, I think there's definitely, there's no lack of ability there. They're certainly able to do it. I feel like they probably made a decision that they don't like the stats around their own 10-meter line when you decide to run it. And that's why I think they literally go to nine and that box kick like all the time. I think they feel like, you know what, we'd rather, like, the chances of us giving away a penalty if we hang on to the ball here and try and get into their 10-meter is probably greater than the other way around. So and I feel like they just, off the back of that, they just don't like to take any chances there. Like, I would personally prefer, and I think Leinster do this quite a lot, is I think when they're in that position with any kind of momentum, they think that they can actually continue to get momentum and get into the opposition's 10-meter line and force penalties there. Force penalties in there from the opposition, giving them away in defence. Whereas I think Munster feel the other way about it and they're a bit more conservative there, would be my view. That's why I think they go to that all the time, particularly when they don't have any momentum coming into that area of the pitch. So I thought it was interesting to hear Larkham be so defensive about it. I'm not surprised he was defensive about it. He has to defend his work. He called them misinformed, I think was the quote, wasn't it? Like, I'm not sure that that's right. I think you still, whatever stats he's looking at, I still think they look like a conservative team from an attack perspective, particularly around the middle of the pitch, just to tie into what I was just saying there. I feel like they don't want to give away any penalties there while in attack. or while hanging onto the ball on that part of the pitch, because they don't feel like it's they don't like whatever stats they're looking at. They don't like. And I think he's got to take responsibility for that. He is the attack coach, and you know, if he was to, you know, put up some stats and say, well, look, this is why, you know, I'm sure he could probably convince us why, but I still would like to see them, given what they have on the pitch, just play a little bit more around that part. Like, that's the best part of the pitch to attack, because particularly with that new kicking rule, the 50-22, I think, you know, most teams, if they're not respecting you, yes, do kick for that space. But if they are respecting, they're holding people back, you got to back those guys to be able to get the ball into areas where you can stress the opposition at least, you know?
But Luke, isn't that the point? Isn't that the key point in all of this? Is that Munster do have, like, they have the players. That is the most frustrating thing. We're not talking about a limited back line here that, you know, like, there's just no point in using them. Let's go to the kicking game. Like you said, like, it's pretty much, okay, Jack Crowley was playing, but it's pretty much an international quality back line that they had out. Rory Scannell has been capped too. So I think that's the frustrating thing. I mean, imagine being a guy like Keith Earls or Andrew Conway, you know, and you're looking at everyone else, you know, and even we're talking about Six Nations, like, they don't get much of a chance to showcase what they're about compared to other guys who are vying for the spots on the wing. I mean, like I mentioned, it was -3 at times. They were going, getting bloody properly freezing out there, standing there trying to get the ball. But even I think of...
Do you think, Ian, can I ask you on that? Do you think they get lured into playing a little bit? And I think the box kick is probably what we're all talking about here, isn't it, really? Do you think they get lured into that because Andrew Conway is so good in the air? Zeebo is very good in the air. I think Keith Earls has really improved his attacking chase of box kicks. They also have had Conor Murray there for so long, who is just probably the best... Well, I would say he's probably the best box kicker in the world. I don't say that too lightly. I think he's brilliant at it. Do you think they get lured into doing that because it's probably a strength for them too?
Yeah, like, I mean, look, they're playing a South African style of play. Like, this sounds like we're, like, repeating the same things we've been saying about ages. They're playing a South African style of play without having the South African pack. And that, look, that has become very clear, even thanks to Victor Matfield, who spilled the beans on a conversation he had with Johan van Gran, was pretty revealing as well, in that, you know, he made the point that they haven't had Jason Jenkins and Orji Snyman. Basically, we haven't had the pack to be able to bully other teams. So, to me... Then you have to shift in terms of what you're doing. Let's try and play to different strengths. Okay, we don't have the pack to do what the Springboks do. What can we do with this pack? What can we do with this backline? And I think that's been one of the most frustrating things of the time that Stephen Larkin has been in charge and of the attack and van Gran. And like, the reality is it's not going to change from now until those guys leave at the end of the season. It's absolutely not. So it's just the way it is. Munster are going to have to see it out for the next 6 months. But I think whoever comes in next, and as head coach, director of rugby, attack coach, whatever it may be, they've got a big job in their hands, I think, to change the mindset of the players, because they've been so kind of tuned into a game plan that just doesn't suit them at all. So that's what I say. The most frustrating thing is that they have the players and we just don't see enough of it. Like, think back to the play that Munster played when Rory Scannell put in the crossfield kick for Keith Earls off a scrum inside Munster's own half. They recycled, made great ground down the left. Mike Haley involved too. Then Jack Crowley puts another crossfield kick across the way. Like, that kind of clever set piece move attacks, we just haven't really seen much of that at all. And like, it wasn't a strong cast team either. That's the thing. It's worth mentioning. It's obviously a tough place to go, but that was far from their first team. So they got out of jail. Like, they should win at home against Wasps. They're set very well in Europe, but I suppose probably similar to what I said about Ulster, I still feel that when Munster, particularly if they're on the road in the latter stages, if they come up against at Toulouse or, you know, someone like that, I think that they'll still have their number, because Munster haven't shown enough evolution despite what Stephen Larkin had came out with today. That would be my opinion on it. That's been probably my opinion. I've been consistent, I think, with you lads as well in saying that over the last couple of years, but it's not going to change from now until the end of the season. It's over the summer, I think, where the major work is needed for everyone who comes in.
Well, the big takeaway from all this for me is that if you ever want to get something off your chest, don't tell Victor Matfield, because he'll go straight on national TV and be like, I just had a private conversation with this guy, and let me tell you, he's not happy.
It's an African knitting circle. Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, I don't think he told me that super sport over here. but just to finish up, before we finish for the evening, just before we came out air, Luke, Barry Kinston was saying that Leinster are eyeing up Jason Jenkins, the Munster Springbok second row, to join at the end of the season. To fill maybe a hole at second row. Jack Dunn is on his way out. You're shaking your head already. Are we going to get your opinion on it?
Well, no one else can see me shaking my head, but it annoys me. Like, you know, you look at Jack Dunn then, you know, I mean, was he, I don't get, like, he's a kind of big,
he seems to be on his way to Exeter by all accounts.
That's the word. Like, he looks like a big, heavy guy. Does he not fit the bill there? Like, I don't know, like letting someone like that go. Now, maybe he wanted to go. Maybe he's looked at the situation there saying, you know what, I don't think I can get into that Leinster team. Yeah, I don't know. That one didn't seem right to me either. Do Leinster need that? Do Leinster need to be going? I don't think they need to be going abroad for these players. Like, it's Jason, like Scott Fardy was a serious, serious rugby player. Like, I can get behind a Scott Fardy. I can get behind a Doug Howlett. I can get behind a Vermeulen. I cannot get behind a Jason Jenkins. That to my mind is like, what, there's something wrong with that. Now, maybe they're kind of blocked in what they can do, but like, Jesus, like, get a Rolls Royce in. Get a guy who's going to lift the standards when your internationals are away. Don't be getting someone like, I don't know. That one seems like, that annoys me now. And like, replacing probably a young Leinster lad with probably a competition, the URC has less game time for Leinster, young Leinster players as it is. Like, why would you be getting someone like that in? If you're going to do it, get a real sterling guy in. Get an international guy, maybe at the end of his career, all the experience, still a great player, pay him a load. No, I don't have as much of a problem with that. But I don't know. Jeez, that one seems like a bad, is it strong rumors? Is that, yeah, or is that just you?
Murray Kitson was reporting that it was happening in the summer. But
time will tell. Yeah, like, and to be fair, Murray's usually on the ball, but it's no secret that Leinster have been looking for, I mentioned this a few weeks ago to you guys, they've been looking for a tight headlock, a big heavy lock for a while.
I think it was made out, Keane, that as Luke said, it would have been a marquee name. Like people were, you know, expecting maybe like an even Etzebeth or, you know, someone along those lines.
Absolutely. I think I saw Bernard Jackman in his Sunday Independent column a few weeks ago as well, linking Leinster to Chris Vui from Bristol. So you wouldn't say he's a sort of a marquee name as well. So maybe this is the market that they're in. I would just add as well, like, I totally agree with Luke. Like, I was very critical of Munster signing Jason Jenkins. I would be equally as critical as well. Like, the other thing to mention, apart from leaving Jack Dunn, which I don't get either. Like, I was at a Leinster development team played the Ireland under-20s a few weeks ago, and I was at the game, and Jack Dunn picked up an injury actually in the game, but he's such a big unit. And I'm surprised someone like Leo Cullen, they've obviously seen something far more, you know, trained eye than I do, that they just don't rate. But I'm surprised they haven't given him more of a chance. But
I was embarrassed in all this. That's
the thing. And sorry, the one point I want to make is Jason Jenkins has played 18 minutes, I think, since he's come to Munster. So, like, you're rolling the dice in a guy who has had serious injury problems since he's come. So he's supposed to be class, like, on his day. But Munster, certainly, it's been a bad signing for Munster in terms of return on investment when you look at how little he's played. So I don't know. Like, I think it's a very strange signing as well. And all the things I said about Jason Jenkins signing for Munster, I would say the same things about him signing for Leinster. I think I agree with both of you lads, like, and you, Will, saying that if you're going out getting an Etzebeth or whatever, you can understand that. But I don't know. I don't get this. I don't think they really need him either.
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll have to wait and see if it comes to pass. But for now, we have this weekend's Champions Cup games to look forward to. And I thank Luke Keane for joining me tonight. Thanks, guys.
Cheers, lads.
That's all we have time for this week on The Left Wing. We will be back next week with another show. And in the meantime, you could subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.